Before I get into the show today, I wanted to send prayers to the family and friends of Phil Valentine, the conservative radio talk show host based in Nashville, Tennessee. He passed away on August 21st, 2021, due to the complications of COVID-19. He was 61 years old. I also want to send prayers to the family and friends of Rolling Stones drummer Charlie Watts. He passed away August 24th, 2021. He died peacefully in the hospital after a medical procedure. He was 80 years old. So please continue sending your love and prayers to all of them at this time. Have you felt the world has lost its mind? That people don't have common sense anymore? Don't fear. This Common Sensocrat is here and you're not alone. You may agree, disagree, or just want to listen. If you're always up for a good time with some humor and some real talk, then you are in the right place. I'm going to update you all with the latest news in politics, culture, lifestyle, fashion, so much more. I am your host, Carrington Rowe, so gear up for the harshest truth, not the sweetest lie. Let's go. Welcome to my new segment, Let's Go Local. What I do in this segment is I focus on a specific city. For my listeners who either live in the city or know people who do, this is good for you because you may not realize what's going on there. Today, I am starting with Cincinnati, Ohio, because not only is that my hometown, but there's a lot happening there. We can focus on the national news, of course. However, right now, the big fights are in your districts. I'm going to get into what's happening and then give you my usual education lightning round. So let's get into Cincinnati, Ohio, and other news in the tri-state. This first article is from CityBeat, and the headline reads, and this is from August 25th, it reads, Beshear yanks Kentucky's school masking order after state Supreme Court ruling. Now, for those of you that don't understand Cincinnati, Ohio, the reason I'm talking about Kentucky is because Northern Kentucky is basically Cincinnati, Ohio's gay cousin. Let's be honest. It's true. For those of you that live in Cincinnati, you get the joke. Because we literally we're at the very, very, very bottom of Ohio and literally on top of Northern Kentucky. If you look at the map, Cincinnati, Ohio runs right across that line because we're on the river. So, for example, from my parents' house, if you have to take the highway, you have to cross into Kentucky and go through parts of Kentucky like Fort Thomas and go down and then you end up back in Ohio, and then there's downtown Cincinnati. So that's that whole thing. So a lot of Cincinnatians really get why we have to care about Kentucky a little bit. But this is actually interesting because this proves why the governors should not act like dictators. So Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear has rescinded a statewide order for those in schools to mask up just 2 weeks after putting the order in place. The Kentucky Supreme Court shared an opinion August 21st that the state's General Assembly could limit what a governor can and cannot do in his or her own. In practice, Beshear can no longer set a mask order for the Commonwealth, despite the state's COVID-19 cases overwhelming hospitals. Instead, he would need to call a special session of the General Assembly to discuss and pass a new state of emergency together, and then pass orders that result from the state of emergency. Now, that basically means, actually not even basically, that actually means that public health emergencies will be mitigated by committees of legislators. People keep forgetting those are the guys that make the laws, the guys and gals that make the laws, okay? Instead of measures put forth by medical experts such as Dr. Stephen Stack, commissioner for the Kentucky Department for Public Health. Stack and other medical personnel have been appearing at the COVID-19 briefings with Beshear throughout the pandemic. So, yeah, basically the Supreme Court ruled that's the way you got to do it. You know, that's your position. You don't tell us what to do. the state legislators vote on what to do. So sorry, not sorry. That's the way it goes. This is a quote from Bashir himself. He said this on August 23rd. He said, quote, "The position we put forth, I still think is right, but we lost. I lost. I can still work my tail off every day with the tools that I have to protect people," end quote. Yeah. Yeah. And actually in Ohio, so this is how it kind of relates to Ohio as well, because in Ohio, it continues here, in Ohio, a similar situation unfolded earlier this year with the passing of Senate Bill 122, which blocks the Ohio Department of Health and, by extension, Governor Mike DeWine from enacting health protocols. Until June, DeWine largely had supported protective measures such as masking, capacity limits, physical distancing, and curfews, and credits those actions with slowing the spread of COVID-19 within the Buckeye State. So, yeah, he did try the same thing, and then guess what? They're like, nope, you're done. The health department cannot make those decisions. We did not elect the public health department. We just, yeah, then that's true. The people did not elect the doctor. So that's the way the law works. And guess what? Fun fact for you guys, a mandate is not a law. Riverfest is back this year. So on local12.com, they post the rules for Riverfest, what not to do and where to park in Covington, Kentucky. So again, that's across the river right from downtown Cincinnati for those of you that are not familiar with Cincinnati, Ohio, and how it's looking and set up. So Riverfest returns to both sides of the Ohio River for 2021 on September 5th. Since the event was canceled in 2020, here's a reminder of the rules in Covington. Alcohol is prohibited on city property and in public places at all times. All coolers and beverage containers are subject to inspection and will be checked at designated checkpoints. Anyone wishing to bring alcohol to a private event must have it in the impact area before 6 p.m. After 6 p.m., police officers will not allow anyone, including residents, with alcohol to enter the impact area. Glass containers, bicycles, skateboards, pets, rollerblades, roller skates, fireworks, and motorized scooters such as Lime, Bird, etc. are all prohibited in the impact area. Motorized vehicles or scooters are also not permitted on flood walls. Swimming in both the Ohio and Licking Rivers is prohibited during Riverfest. Mooring along the Covington shoreline is prohibited. And the Covington officials wanted to let people know about road closures for the event. And it says the following areas are tow-away zones beginning at 7 a.m. Sunday. And the City of Covington, Kentucky Twitter page posted this on August 25th. They posted the map of the road closures and where to see the fireworks. So if you are planning on going, that is the information for you. It is on local12.com for you to look at. So with this, I don't see anything about COVID protocols, which is good. So I guess keep your eyes and ears open for the changes if they have any up until then. So, but that's good. I don't see anything about COVID protocols. So if y'all are planning on going to Riverfest, have fun. Enjoy yourselves. I'm glad it's back. I'm glad it's back. This next article is from Local 12, and the headline reads, "Arrests made in string of funeral thefts. Cemetery employees took action to stop thieves." This is in Fort Mitchell, Kentucky. What was supposed to be a moment of peace turned chaotic at one Northern Kentucky cemetery. Police got a call about a theft during a funeral at Highland Cemetery Monday morning. It led to a search for two suspects, including one who is believed to be armed. It also led to a local school lockdown. Tom Homebrink, general manager at Highland Cemetery, said it all happened very quickly. A family was mourning the loss of a loved one when, all of a sudden, two people started rummaging through parked cars, opening doors, and running off with a purse in hand. "I jumped to my car and I drove around, and he was running away with a purse. Had him sticking it under his shirt," Homebrink said. And then Patty Nugent, a Highland Cemetery employee, said, "I got a call from Tom to close the gates. That's all he said was to lock the gates and didn't ask any questions. Ran out here, and as I was shutting the second gate, because they're pretty heavy, a van came flying. I didn't think he was going to stop. And that's what she said there. And then Nugent also said the thieves tried to drive through the grass to escape, but their car hit a stump. She said, quote, "They were yelling at me to open the gate, and I said, 'No way.' And he leaned up and just looked like a gun." Police say the suspects then ran off by foot towards the Kroger across the street and then Beechwood High School. Both Xavier Joyce and Trayvon Lusk were taken into custody. Says, quote, "We were able to apprehend one of the suspects immediately. Our SRO was right there on the spot and was able to spot him right away and get him apprehended. The second subject went to the wood line between the school and the interstate, and we were able to corner him in the wood line, and eventually we were able to track him down." And that's what the Fort Mitchell Police Captain Bill Zerhuizen said. And then Nugent came back and said, quote, "Within minutes, not even minutes, seconds, police were all over and they caught him. I'm just thankful that they caught them." I mean, that is crazy. Like, can you imagine being at a funeral and you literally turn around, like you're mourning the loss of your loved one, and all at the same time, your purse is being stolen. Like, how the heck does this happen? It's just one of those things where you just kind of go, "I'm glad they're caught. I'm glad they're apprehended." But oh my Lord, they are. Whoa, what a day for those people, right? What a day. This next story, local restaurant decides to cut hours due to high costs, food shortages. This story here, it really breaks my heart because this restaurant is actually up the street from my parents' place. And it's really good. It's Sweets and Meats Barbecue. They were originally a food truck, then they opened a restaurant. And they're not the only restaurant going through all this. Restaurants all over the country are going through this. It's just a shame because these are really nice people. And yeah, it's just such a shame. But it says after 18 months of challenges, a local restaurant says staying open full time during the week is just not profitable. Sweet and Meats Barbecue owner Kristen Bailey said to keep her staff employed and her doors open, they have to cut back hours. Quote, "This is my dream. I've had this business for 7 years. I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired of losing money." End quote. Bailey said her food supply and labor costs have doubled since March 2021, and she's not getting as many customers through the doors. Quote, "Pride is what's kept us open because we've been losing money all summer long at our carryout restaurant." End quote. To make matters worse, she said she cannot get a hold of many barbecue staples because of supply chain issues. Quote, "This past week, we couldn't get ribs at all. We went to five different suppliers, couldn't get ribs. I'm a barbecue restaurant. That's a big issue. Chicken is very hard to get. The cost of chicken is up 200%, supply and demand," end quote. Bailey said the food truck and catering are bringing in good business, but with the uptick in the Delta variant, some events are getting canceled already. Quote, "That makes me nervous because it's the same thing that happened last year. You know, we had over 160 events cancel in 2020," end quote. "Scaling back is hard, but it keeps the crew employed and the doors open." Quote, "The food is still fresh. You know, everything is done every single day here. We're not going away. It's just going to look differently for a little while. I just want this to be over with. We're tired like everybody else," end quote. The restaurant will now be open Friday, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's actually good for me personally because then I can go in and say, hey, and you all can too because they sure could use the business. Now we're getting into the Cincinnati Bengals. So on Cincinnati.com and the Inquirer, the headline reads, "Joe Burrow excited to play in first game since knee injury. Joe Burrow will be reaching a big milestone when he takes the field on Sunday when the Cincinnati Bengals host the Miami Dolphins for their preseason finale. After tearing both his ACL and MCL in November of 2020, he took a relentless approach to his rehab process. It paid off." Bengals head coach Zach Taylor told reporters before practice on Wednesday he is letting his quarterback play on Sunday in a limited capacity. Taylor and Burrow have been in constant communication, therefore, it did not come as a shock when the 24-year-old was told he would be suiting up this week. Quote, I think it's important going into this last preseason game to be as close as you can to have a game-like feel. I'm going to be in the huddle during week one, so I need to be out there for the first play of this game. And that is what Burrow said. Taylor has a plan for how much he'll let Burrow do, and the Bengals have been very calculated with their approach and how they manage their second-year quarterback. Burrow has practiced in every practice during training camp except for one. He traveled to Cincinnati's first two preseason games but did not dress. For Burrow, getting in the huddle and having his teammates get used to hearing him play or make play calls is important. Although he does it in practice every day, he and Taylor stressed how different play calling can be during a game. So that's exciting. Joe Burrow will be back, but in a limited capacity starting out, which I think is smart because at least he's young. He can heal a little bit, but I think it's good that it's like baby steps. So I'm glad he's involved again. I'm glad he's getting better. So we shall see how this plays out. This is the updated list on the businesses and venues that are requiring masks and COVID-19 vaccines. This is from Cincinnati.com and the Inquirer. So here is the deal. So the entertainment venues that are doing all this. So beginning Wednesday, well, yesterday, both Motor Pub and the Woodward Theater will require all guests and staff to provide either proof of vaccination or a negative COVID-19 test performed within the previous 72 hours. Hard copies, photocopies, or digital photos of vaccine cards or negative tests are acceptable for entry. Memorial Hall began requiring all patrons, employees, contractors, vendors, and volunteers to wear masks August 16th while working or attending a public event. Riverfront Live is requiring either a negative COVID-19 test or full vaccination for all shows indoors and outdoors. Aronoff Center for the Arts is requiring masks in order to attend an event regardless of vaccination status. Specific health and safety protocols for each event will be communicated to ticket holders prior to the performance. Beginning in October, Music and Event Management, Inc., will require either proof of vaccination or a negative COVID-19 test result prior to any concert. MEMI operates the Taft Theater downtown, Riverbend Music Center and PNC Pavilion in Anderson Township, Andrew J. Brady Icon Music Center and Icon Festival Stage at Smale Riverfront Park at the Banks. Restaurants. A mask mandate for Dutch's in Hyde Park, employees and customers dining indoors are required to wear masks regardless of vaccination status. The restaurant also reserved bar seating for people who are vaccinated. The decision was due to increasing case numbers, owner Rachel Bernstein said. She and her husband, Brad Bernstein, also owns Red Feather, which has the same mask requirements. Two Northside bars, the Littlefield and Second Place, are offering indoor dining only to fully vaccinated customers. Both bars have the same owner, and Second Place also may ask for proof of vaccination. In early August, the Listing Loon posted on social media that customers should not dine at the wine bar unless they are fully vaccinated. In Montgomery, Bones Burgers reinstated mask wearing for staff in July. Patrons are not required to wear a mask while in the restaurant. Well, that's good to know. So Montgomery, I guess I'm still going to go to Bones Burgers because I appreciate the fact they're not making me wear one. But everywhere else, sorry guys, I don't think you're going to be making as much money as you would pre-COVID or when you reopened. So I mean, you have every right to require it, but that shows that you discriminate, and people that do that should not get any support. Sorry, because they are discriminating. So, yeah. So I gave you the list of people of places in Cincinnati, Ohio so far that are requiring all that stuff, the masks or the vaccine or negative test. So there you go, folks. So it's your choice to go or not, but I wouldn't recommend it because, again, these are places that discriminate. Hey, Common Sensocrats, make sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm on Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. I am also updating videos for my YouTube and Rumble channel, but definitely subscribe to those anyway. So hit that button that looks like a bell so you can immediately get notified when those videos are released. Like and follow on all of the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Getter, Instagram, TikTok, Telegram, and of course, follow me on commonsensocrats.locals.com. If you have any suggestions on topics that you want me to cover and or have any questions, don't hesitate to email common.sensocrat@gmail.com. And now, back to the show. This next article is from Cincinnati Magazine, and this is the headline, Meet the Cincinnati TikToker Transforming Her Childhood Home into a Modern Masterpiece. Local developer and home renovator Taylor, Gruenwald, is turning her childhood home in St. Bernard into a modernized rental property. The 26-year-old graduated from Ohio State University with a degree in city and regional planning, and she's accumulated more than 480,000 followers on TikTok, where she posts tutorials and updates on her renovation project. We caught up with Gruenwald to hear about her experience using her talents to renovate her own home and rental. So, of course, I do this interview with her, and she talks about, her childhood, what was it like, and was there anything important for you, and she goes into all this stuff, things she wanted to preserve and things she was okay getting rid of, and she posts these pictures of what her parents look like in front of her home, pregnant with her, which I think is so sweet, and she was actually, I like this part, her grandparents actually bought the house over 60 years ago. I mean, how cool, I mean, it's literally a family, it's the family home. And I think it's really cool that she's doing this. And yeah, it's really cool. She talks about how she gets inspired with her designs. And of course she talks about HGTV a lot. I mean, who doesn't? I look at all those designs and I'm like, I want that for a house. You know, that's really nice. And then this last question was really, you know, about, do you have any advice for someone in Cincinnati looking to renovate their own property? And she goes into just start planning and researching now and set a realistic budget for your situation. When the time comes and an opportunity presents itself, don't be afraid to dive in and get your hands dirty. If I've learned one thing during this process, it's that we are capable of more than we give ourselves credit for. And YouTube or even TikTok can guide you through just about any DIY project. It's also okay to learn by trial and error with most cosmetic improvements. For more intense portions of a renovation, such as structural work, you'll want to have a contractor on board that you can trust. Ask around for referrals and talk to different folks to find the right fit ahead of time. So I think it's amazing. Her designs actually look really incredible, and she's done a really good job. So if you want to look at those pictures, head over to CincinnatiMagazine.com in the garden, the home and garden section, and they'll tell you all about that because the pictures are absolutely stunning. This final local headline is from Fox 19, and I was actually physically there when this all went down. So the headline reads, Tri-State School Board Members Sued Over Mask Mandate. And damn straight they should be. So I was actually physically there in Forest Hills School District, and that's where I went to school. That's my alma mater. I went to Forest Hills, went to Maddox, Nagel, Anderson, grew up there. So I care a lot about this specific subject. So I was actually there, and I actually get into a lot of detail with it, which I'm going to do it again, but I get into detail also on the podcast called Canceled Out Podcast, which you need to subscribe to. So even while you're listening to this episode, get on your tablet, laptop, whatever, subscribe to it, and it's on there for you. So definitely subscribe to them. So back to the story. I was there. They were voting on the mask. It wasn't really supposed to be a vote. It was supposed to be a discussion of the mask mandate, right? So public discussion, it was originally supposed to be private. But then they decided to make it public and tell the public what their plans were for masks for the children in schools. So we're there. They go through. There are other things they have to get through. And then finally, they get to the masks. The whole point of the discussion. So they motion, so when they present to the public the options that they had for the students. So they had option A, which was mask optional for elementary kids. They had mask optional, and there was nothing in there about virtual or anything like that. So I thought, oh, okay, well, option A sounds pretty good, right? Then they had option B, which is mask mandate up until September 13th, because that was supposed to be, I guess, the federal thing with buses. That's the whole thing with the buses, that they are making kids mask until September 13th, or at least they'd reconvene on September 13th. And then option C, they had pretty much the same thing, but a little more strict with the vaccines and all that stuff. So they get the motion, this is for elementary, so they get the motion, they motion to do the vote, which we were like, oh, so it is happening. Okay, I thought they weren't yet, but cool, fine. So they motion to vote, and then the motion is passed to vote, so then they go motion to vote. So the vote goes down the line. So, okay, first board member, which was Elizabeth Meyer, and then it was Julie Bissinger, and then it was Forrest Heiss, and then it was Dee Dee, what's her name? Yeah, Dee Dee Choice. That's, you know, she goes by Dee Dee. And then it was Dr. Leslie Rasmussen. So that's the exact order of the vote that we saw from our point of view as the public. So they go down the line. Elizabeth votes yes on option A. Then Julie also voted yes on option A. Then Forrest votes no on option A. Then Dee Dee votes yes. And then Dr. Leslie Rasmussen votes no. So right away, I was shocked because I would think Dee Dee would have said no because she leans more Democrat. So I was like, well, that's shocking. And of course, everybody's like, hallelujah, the vote is passed. Great. I mean, that was easier than I thought, right? Then Dee Dee decides, wait, what did I vote on? Yeah, kid you not. That's what happened. And everybody went, are you freaking kidding me? Why are you even on the board if you don't even remember what you voted on? Why are you even here? So, but of course, I gave her the benefit of the doubt because of her age, because she's older. I believe she's like in her 70s or 80. So I was like, okay. I joked around and I said, I looked at everybody and I said, okay, she pulled a Joe Biden. Okay. She forgot what she was there for. Okay. So they motioned to vote again. So, of course, the public was frustrated about this, but we automatically went, well, crap, she's going to vote no now. She's going to get she's going to get, everybody's going to get their way now. So then they motioned to vote again. So they agreed to motion. They all passed that motion to vote. So then here we are. The second round comes. Elizabeth, same thing. Yes. Julie, yes. Forrest, no. And then Dee Dee says yes again. And then, of course, Dr. Leslie says no. So we're like, well, are you here? Are you mentally here? Because we don't think you are. So then we went, oh, we can't do this now. I mean, it's passed. You did this twice. And then Elizabeth Meyer comes in and actually interrupts and says, whoa, wait. Why do I feel like there's a lot of cheating going on right there? Obviously, she didn't say it like that, but I'm kind of doing it verbatim here. But she, not really doing it verbatim, but I'm kind of just, but that's what she said. She goes, why do I feel like you're cheating? Like, why do I feel like this is a cheat situation? And everybody went, thank you. This is cheating. This is trying to get your way. This is ridiculous. But then they motion to vote again, and then they go down the line. Well, right when it gets to Dee Dee's vote again on the masks, she look her and Leslie look at each other, and in front of everybody, by the way, not even trying to hide it at this point, literally goes, so what am I answering here? And Leslie says, you're voting no. And everybody just went, oh my God, like, why did we come here then? I mean, it was so sad to watch this because it was like, really? These are the people that are running the school right now? These are the people that are running your schools? Oh, hell to the no. And that completely made me angry, just like everybody else felt, okay? Even the people that were even pro-mask. I even talked to a couple people that were pro-mask there. Of course, some of them ran off like little children because they didn't want to get confronted. But one of them I actually talked to, and he actually went like this. He was, look, I'm not like I don't really agree with the mask option, but whoa, the way they handled that was not cool. And it's like, yeah, dude, did you vote them in? He goes, yeah. And I said, well, there you go. So now here we are. So with this lawsuit, so here we are to the lawsuit that it was filed by, of course, a John Doe plaintiff who was a resident in the Forest Hills local school district and says school board and its five members violated the Open Meetings Act when they approved a policy requiring masks in grades K through six. An attorney Kurt Hartman filed the suit in Hamilton County Common Press Court, Common Pleas Court, Wednesday morning. And this was on August, this update on August 20th, but it was published on August 18th. So, it's a big deal. So right now, technically, the lawsuit is asking for a declaratory judgment that the school board and its members violated or threatened to violate the legal requirements of the Open Meetings Act by failing to state the specific purpose of the meeting and exceeding the scope of the meeting, which is true. They really misled the public on what the meeting was really about. So, yeah, the meeting took place on August 11th. And so this is a big deal, especially because of in the school district itself, it serves more than 7,300 students in Anderson Township and Newtown. So for those of you that are in the Forest Hills area, especially where, that's where my parents are as well. That's where they are. I mean, I grew up there. It's the same house, and it's just devastating to me that they want to do this to the kids. You're not going to win either way. You're going to piss someone off either way, school board, okay? You're going to piss people off. But it's like, dude, but you got to think of what's right for the kids. You can't be thinking of your personal fears and feelings about this, okay? You got to think of everybody. You got to think of the community, not for yourselves. So, and this is what the whole thing is. For the first 2 weeks of school, this one here is for middle school and high school students. This is what they ended up passing. This is what should have been for all grades. It says, for the first 2 weeks of school, masks will be strongly encouraged but not required for middle school and high school students. I mean, what about the parents who have children age range, let's say 8 to 16 years old? Dude, the middle school and high school kids that they have are going to be like, I don't have to wear one. And all the bullying will start again within the home. So this is not a good situation, what they've got going on right now. So if anything, if I had to pick my top three to vote out, definitely Dee Dee. She's got to go because clearly she's too old to be on the school board because she can't mentally run it. She can't mentally own her own decisions. And then Forrest Heiss, because he's kind of a flip-flop. I noticed that for sure. He to be honest with you, I think he thinks that, this is my opinion, but this is just what I saw, because his arrogance is very thick. I think he believes he's the Dr. Fauci of Anderson Township. I'm just saying. And then we have Dr. Leslie Rasmussen, who's got to go as well. Those are the top three that I would pick to vote out. And then Dr. Leslie Rasmussen, another interesting thing about her is that she has been kind of, I mean, we have emails to prove it. She's been sending threats to people. Maybe not from her directly, maybe in her email. I mean, in her emails she has, like, we have proof of emails that she sent directly, but she also has people, you know, that, she sends people and little investigators. And I'm just like, girlfriend, are you desperate much? I think so. And I don't really care saying this because I was there to witness all this. I was there to hear what they had to say. And that was the result. So not only have you pissed the parents off, but you've pissed the whole community off, guys, with this. So, hate to say it, but y'all are on blast. And Those are the three for sure that have got to go. But I will go ahead and plug this. These are the four. Now I know there are technically three positions I said, but these are the four that are actually that actually give a crap about your kids and the community. Literally, these four you should really keep an eye on and actually read up on these people are Bob Bibb, Katie Stewart, Sarah Jonas, and Linda Hausfeld, because these are the people that actually give a crap about your kids, and they will not pull the crap that this board did. These are the four you want in there. So if you gotta pick, if you gotta vote one of the other two out that I didn't mention in the board currently, well, then fine. But that's your own decision to make. But my opinion, vote these four as much as possible. Look up them. Look up their information. Go to fourforesthills.com and you will read all about them because these four are very incredible people and they actually care about your kids. And they have kids. So they care. They care a whole lot. And what shocks me is that these other board members that I mentioned, the Dr. Leslie, Forrest, and Dee Dee, these three have kids. Now, Dee Dee has grandchildren. Now, I'm not sure about Forrest, but he has children. I know that. So, they have kids that attend Forest Hills. So you would think they would care a little bit more about this, but clearly they're showing that they don't. So those three are the ones that do not. But the four I mentioned, Bob, Katie, Sarah, and Linda, really, really keep an eye on those four because they are the ones that will definitely, definitely work for you, work for the schools, and help save Forest Hills. So vote for them, vote for them, vote for them on November 2nd because that is when actual election day is this year. So vote for them. I will say it multiple times for the rest of the time being. Vote for them, vote for them, vote for them. Welcome to Education Lightning Round, Top 10 Stories of the Week. University of Michigan professor says math classes are racist. University of Michigan mathematics professor Deborah Ball argued on a podcast that math inflicts racism against Black and Hispanic students. She claimed that math is, quote, dominated by whiteness and racism. It's difficult to figure out how to surface and unpack the ways that mathematics, for example, is a harbor for whiteness, end quote. UNC journalism dean resigns after Nicole Hannah-Jones controversy. University of North Carolina Dean of Journalism Susan King is stepping down after 9 years in her position following her publicized emails regarding the hiring of New York Times author Nicole Hannah-Jones. In recently published emails, King told the Carolina Alumni Review that she, quote-unquote, did not initiate a five-year fixed contract for Hannah-Jones, though the Board of Trustees asserts otherwise. James Madison University trained students that Christians, white males, are oppressors. James Madison University forced student employees to undergo training that claims people who identify as male, straight, cisgender, or Christian are oppressors that engage in the quote-unquote systemic subjugation of other minority groups. One of the training videos described oppression as, quote, the systemic subjugation of one social group by a more powerful social group for the social, economic, and political benefit of the more powerful social group, end quote. University of Southern California will partially defund police after nearly year-long review. The University of Southern California plans to partially defund its campus police department. The Community Advisory Board recommended the university, quote, reallocate funds where warranted to re-envision its policing strategy, end quote. The university's Department of Public Safety chief also endorsed the partial defunding. Quinnipiac University announces Wi-Fi restrictions for unvaccinated students. Connecticut's Quinnipiac University announced that it will impose fines and Wi-Fi restrictions on students who cannot or will not provide proof of a COVID-19 vaccination by the beginning of the fall semester. In an email from campus leadership, students were informed that unvaccinated people will lose access to the university's Wi-Fi system if they do not meet the mandatory vaccine requirements by September 14th. College presidents meet maskless after issuing mask mandates. Four college presidents in Virginia, James Madison University, Eastern, Mennonite University, Bridgewater College, and Blue Ridge Community College attend a maskless event indoors shortly after implementing indoor mask mandates for their students and faculty. Texas teacher cries, compares lack of mask mandate to school shooting. A high school English teacher in North Austin, Texas, recorded herself tearfully comparing the lack of a mask mandate at her school to an impending school shooting. The teacher said that her quote unquote regular back to school anxieties were heightened this year because of the lack of mask mandate. Quote, "It's like we are trying to protect our students from a mass shooting that we know is coming, but cannot do anything about," end quote. And that is what the teacher said. Chicago Teachers Union claims school choice has a racist history. The Chicago Teachers Union, which represents more than 25,000 Illinois educators, claimed that school choice and voucher programs are rooted in racism, despite evidence that points to the contrary. The union tweeted out, quote, "School choice has a racist history. It hasn't really improved with time," end quote. The account linked to an op-ed from the Chicago Tribune that argued school choice has roots in racism. College board practice exam question prompts students to declare voter ID laws racist. An advanced placement government practice exam included two questions about voter ID laws being racially intolerant. On page 16 of the 34-page exam, students were shown an infographic titled "Voters Without a Government-Issued Photo ID." The correct answer to the question posed by the graphic reads, quote, "Voter ID laws are likely to decrease turnout among African American voters because they are less likely to have government-issued IDs." And finally, Utah teacher calls Donald Trump literal moron in chemistry class rant, gets placed on leave. A chemistry teacher in Lehigh, Utah was placed on administrative leave after she lectured her class on her hatred for Donald Trump and the novel coronavirus. A student in Alpine School District's Lehigh High School recorded their teacher's casual conversation turned rant in a viral video. The teacher can also be heard complaining about students who refuse to get vaccinated. Those are your headlines. In the next local episode, we will be getting into Columbus, and there's a lot happening up there as well. Today's saying is very simple. Let it go. Change the channel. Turn it off. Unsubscribe. Unfollow. Mute. Block. Walk away. Breathe. Sometimes we have to remind ourselves of that. If you're feeling overwhelmed with what you're seeing or dealing with, remember, there was a time when people didn't have cell phones, TVs, video games, and social media. So it is okay to walk away and breathe. Thank you for listening, my common sensocrats. Look out for my next episode with Princess Chloe that will be dropping tomorrow. Until next time, bye. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you liked what you heard, don't forget to subscribe and rate 5 stars in the Apple Podcasts. I need to spread the word as much as possible about this podcast, and you all are such a big help for that. So thank you so much, and I look forward to you all to listen to the next episode.